Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Author's List. I'm John McKenzie and I'm joined by my good pal Josh Hobbs. Josh, how are you?
I'm good, mate. It's good to be doing this. I think this is going to be a fun one today.
Yep, really looking forward to it. It's always good fun just having a look at some exciting strikers in this instance around the world. And it very much is around the world in this episode too. So you're looking forward to jumping in.
Yeah, we had a little bit of feedback from someone last time saying they were all players that they knew already and they were used to having, like, learning about some new players. So hopefully you'll enjoy this one, that we're talking about a few players that you won't have seen in the Championship or the Premier League, or at least not all of them.
Yeah, and I think they're all super fun in their own ways as well, which will be good to talk about. But before we get to that, let's just talk a little bit about the position that we're scouting for in this episode. So we've already said we're looking for strikers. I've got two things I think we need to talk about contextually before we get into this. First is I want to talk a little bit about the position in the squad that we're trying to fill, and then we can move on from there to talk a little bit about the role on the pitch itself, both of which I think are interesting questions. So in terms of how you see this player that we're scouting for fitting into the squad, how are you sort of conceiving of them?
You mean as in what position they would have in the hierarchy, do you mean? As in Bamford is number one, number nine kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. And how you see replacing, are we simply replacing Bamford? Are we looking for a player of Bamford's like or with different skill sets?
I think so. What we've tried to look at here is we're trying to talk about players that we think could play the role that Bamford is playing. And I feel rather than looking at a backup role, which is what we could look at, knowing that Bamford is and has been the like undisputed number nine. I think the fact that he will turn 29 at the start of next season, and the fact that he's just had a season where he has been injured for like 80% of it, you need to think about genuine competition and a player that might end up taking over that role from him. I think that's the smart thing to do. Like, you could end up in a difficult situation if Bamford comes back fit and firing, doesn't get injured again, scores loads of goals, and then you're like trying to figure out how to make it, this all work. But then you're just in the situation where you're like, hey, we can actually rotate for once. We can use different players at different times and not have to run players into the ground, which I think would be a nice little change from what we've experienced in the last few years.
And the other thing to say, I suppose, is that we are now playing a system which is accommodating of two strikers if we need it. We have seen Jesse Marsh play the 4-2-2 at Leeds. We've maybe switched into more of a 4-2-3-1 right now, but again, I think that's probably because of personnel. And if you were to bring in a second striker, there's always the option that you could argue to them, well, okay, maybe you won't topple Bamford from the hierarchy, but there's always the option of playing alongside him.
Yeah, true.
So let's talk a little bit about the role itself. I think this is a tricky question to talk about for a number of reasons. One is that we don't really know what we're looking for in a lot of ways. It may make sense to look back on some of Jesse Marsh's previous strikers. But I think when you do that, it's tricky as well, because for a big chunk of time he had Erling Haaland as his as one of his strikers, and it's all well and good saying we need to look for a striker like Erling Haaland, right? But I think there's also, like, it's worth saying at this point that there's a lot of options within the two-striker system if he chooses to go with that next season. There's a lot of different ways that you can fill that position. So how do you see that position, that role, and how would you sort of think about that role as a scouting profile?
Yeah, I think one of the important things for me in looking at all of these players was trying to think about how they can play back to goal, because we're talking about a system where one of the main things that you're looking to do in terms of progress the ball is get the ball up to the striker quickly. That might be to their feet, that might be having to take the ball on the chest, that might be winning headers. So Bamford is someone that is good at that. I think he's got better at that during his time at Leeds as well, because I would say in his first season that kind of felt a bit like it was lacking a bit. But then from the second season onwards, he became a lot more combative, and I think his on the ground link play has always been really good. And if you think back to the first half of the Norwich game, that's when Leeds looked probably at our best under Marsh, where we could get the ball up front, the striker holds it, other players come up and join in with the attacks. And when he's not been playing, Leeds are just massively missing that. It's just Dan James sort of running around and there's no one really there to hold it. So I think that's something that had to be important. Also, if you go to second half of the Southampton game, we had Joffe on, who is a player that I love. I've said that lots of times. But he was sort of so dynamic in his movement that he made our attack better. But also, he would often get the ball in the channel and then make a cutback. And then there isn't that striker present in the box to get on the end of chances. So I'm really thinking about a central presence, so to hold the ball up, but also get on the end of chances in and around the six-yard box, the penalty spot area.
Yeah, and so much of what we've talked about on this channel since Jesse Marsh came in is about how so much of the attacking play, at least, is centrally dominated. It's about getting the ball through the middle, getting the ball into that square of players between like two centre-backs and two centre-midfielders, and just creating chaos. So I think as well, another thing that I was interested in is how these players are going to play off the shoulder of the last man, but in a sort of very direct central space where they're looking for those little gaps in between the last line that they can run through onto. And another phrase that I've used a lot recently is pinning the centre-back. So a lot of this is about getting the opposition into transition moments, so that their defensive unit are running backwards. And if you have a centre forward who's sort of in between the two centre backs running towards goal, then you'll achieve that as well. And that's really useful just in general, in terms of the general dynamic of the team as well. So I think all of those in mind, let's jump in and talk about the players themselves. So we've got, I think, a few options here. We've got a couple of options that we're going to, I guess, dismiss fairly quickly, but they're options that are talked about a fair amount. And then we've got three, I think, more realistic options, and we'll talk about the context behind how likely each of those is. But let's start with the first option. So the first option is currently in the discourse. He's all over Twitter after a good performance last night against Chelsea. He's a player who's already played for Leeds. It is Eddie Nketiah. Obviously, Eddie Nketiah is a player who came through the youth system at Chelsea, moved to Arsenal, and has been at Arsenal ever since, but for that loan move at Leeds, and is coming to the end of his contract. And so he will be, I think, a free transfer in the summer. What do you make of Eddie Nketiah, Josh? And then, having talked about maybe his play style stuff, what do you make of the option as a realistic sort of piece of business for Leeds?
Yes, it's a funny one with Eddie, because if you look back on his time with us, I remember sort of feeling like he wasn't a very good presser. Partly because I think I was comparing him directly to Bamford, who was just looked so good at that time. But then Arsenal fans love Nketiah as a presser. Like they say he's their best like pressing striker. And I saw a tweet yesterday that said, like, Eddie's first half was, like, summed up by the fact that he sort of pressed and scored the first goal, and then he had a poor layoff, and then Chelsea scored an equaliser. So he's a player who I just think of him as a sort of pressy poacher. I think that feels pretty self-explanatory as what that is. I don't personally feel that there's very much to the rest of his game.
Yeah, and then in terms of the piece of business, I guess a lot of people suggesting that, well, it's a free transfer. What's the worst that can happen? You can get a striker who maybe isn't quite fitting in the system.
Yeah, and I think what's important to remember in that is there's pretty much always a fee. It's just that you end up paying the agent and the player a lot more money. Like the classic example of this is that the rumoured signing on fee for Kylian Mbappe at Real Madrid is going to be 100 million. So it's just like PSG are not getting that money. It's just he's getting that money. Not that Eddie would be getting 100 million.
Yeah, so it would stack up in terms of cost. He would obviously be leveraging that situation for his own salary needs as well. So he would be coming out with a pretty decent salary. I'm not necessarily against the idea of playing Eddie in our system. I do think that you could maybe play him alongside another striker like Pat, but I think in terms of the fact that you need, as you've said, we need to think about replacing Pat. I don't think he's that sort of profile, and at this point in time, it's better to, I think, replace Pat than to bring in another striker who then we need to find another partner to play alongside in a few months' time anyway. A striker who is like that, but again, is English and probably would come with a little bit of English tax attached to him, is Dominic Solanke. Again, someone else who came through the Chelsea youth system. I don't think actually played a senior appearance for Chelsea, but did the usual loan move to Vitesse in the Netherlands, performed well there, and then had that early move to Liverpool, which didn't work out so well, and is now at Bournemouth and is tearing up for them, albeit in the Championship. So what do you make of Dom Solanke?
Yeah, I really like him. So I think he's probably a player that's going to carry quite a lot of baggage in his career because of his bad start to life in the Premier League. He just did so badly at Bournemouth to start with that I think people just think, oh, he's not good enough, he's never going to be good enough. But he's only 24 and he's had two excellent seasons in the Championship. He's nearly at 30 goals for this season. And I think we know from our own experience that players who play very well in the Championship can step up and do well in the Premier League. And I was watching, because I'm a weirdo, I was watching the Everton Leicester game last night. And I think Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall is a great example of that as well. Played really, really well for Luton last season, stepped up into the Premier League, and he's not really missed a beat. And I think Solanke could do that. And he basically, to me, he can do all the things that Bamford does well. He's got strength. I think he can poach goals in the box. He's got a good bit of pace about him. I wouldn't say he's like absolutely rapid, but he's got that strength alongside his pace, so that I think that even if defenders are kind of able to catch up with him, he's able to hold them off. I don't think he's quite got the technical touch that Bamford has got. I think Bamford is really, really like underrated in that regard, how good he is at being able to bring other players into the game in tight spaces. But I wouldn't say that he's bad at it. I just think that Pat's really, really good at it.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed watching Dom Solanke actually in the last couple of days, because he's a player who pretty much dropped off my radar when Bournemouth dropped down out of the Premier League. But he's been excellent from what I've seen. Again, echo a lot of what you say. Does a lot of the things that Bamford does, and in fact maybe even reminded me the most of Bamford out of all the players.
Yeah, I would say that
we looked at. Really enjoyed a lot of the stuff that he does. He, like you say, he's a poacher, but he can also finish from distance. Has a real, I guess eye for goal, maybe that's a cliche, but it felt like the games where I watched, he scored a couple of goals where he just knew where the goal was and was able to get a shot away and was hitting bottom corners in a manner reminiscent of Bamford in the Premier League last season. And yeah, likes to come deep to help out the build-up play, but at the same time, gets into the box when he's needed. I felt he had a really good understanding of the game in terms of when it was good for him to drop deep and when it was good for him to then get forward. And a lot of the time you'll see him dropping in to help the progression of the ball around the halfway line. And then you'll immediately see him getting on that line towards the penalty spot and being in dangerous areas as well. In terms of this as a piece of business, how are you feeling about the context of this? Because obviously I think despite the fact that he's maybe been on the wane, I think there would still be a little bit of a fee attached, right?
Yeah, I think he would be the worst value because I think you say there's English tax in the first place. And also now I think, so when we first started making this list, Bournemouth looked like they might kind of possibly drop into the playoffs. Now I think they're going to go up automatically. And so they're able to kind of, they're obviously able to hold on to their best players rather than potentially losing them. And I think they would want a fee like well in the 20s, I think, for him now, which I think we wouldn't want to do that, I don't think.
Yeah, so I think we will dismiss both of those two players, although I think both of them would be completely workable options within our system. I think we just think there's probably better value for money and maybe a slightly better fit in the case of Eddie Nketiah. But let's look at the three other options that we've got in maybe slightly more detail. Now, you may think that a podcast that has talked about Kvaratskhelia, Kvaratskhelia wouldn't struggle with a name as simple looking as this one, but Charles de Ketelaere is how you're supposed to say it.
That was really impressive.
I will accept Charles de Ketelaere.
I always thought it was de Ketelaere, so when you sent me the voice note of de Ketelaere,
that's good too. I think that's good.
I was a little bit afraid.
But yeah, let's talk a little bit about de Ketelaere because he is a fun player. I really enjoyed watching him. He reminds me a lot of Pat, but it may just simply be that they both look like they should be on the set of Brideshead Revisited.
He looks like him, doesn't he? He's got the he's got the foppy hair as well.
That's right, sort of blonde foppy hair. Yeah, but de Ketelaere is someone who has been at Bruges whole time, so all the way through the youth system. And I guess the beauty of being in the Belgian league means that Bruges could play him from the off fairly early on, so he's got approaching 100 appearances for them. Again, another player who it's been fun to watch. I did know quite a bit about de Ketelaere because I've watched a lot of Noah Lang. I should maybe have given you a trigger warning on that, Hobbsy, sorry. But it was good fun watching. It was good fun watching de Ketelaere because I just got so much of a chance to see the link up between him and Lang, and it was very enjoyable to watch. De Ketelaere also has Belgium caps, I think six, but only starting from 2020, so he's a relatively recent arrival for them. But he's gone through their whole development system with the youth sides as well. Talk to us about de Ketelaere. What do you make of him, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, he is like you said, he's just very, very fun. He is kind of, I would say this season, I think he's become more of a striker. In previous seasons, I think he was maybe a bit more of an attacking midfielder. So he's got that ability to drop deep and create, which he still does want to do quite a lot. So he sort of will create chances as much as he will get on the end of chances for himself. He is probably the most technical out of all of these players that we've looked at. So his game is all about close control, less about athleticism, less about sort of really like bursts into the box. He's more like, I would say, like careful in his positioning. And yeah, I would say he's going to be the best out of all of these at bringing other players into the game. But he maybe wants to do it in a slightly different way to some of the other players that we're going to look at. I would say he would prefer to drop a little bit deep, and if he can, turn and then bring players into the game. Not that he doesn't do back-to-goal play, but I think the fact that he's played a bit as a 10 as well makes him kind of want want to turn in that central space rather than play back to goal all the time.
I felt as though when he was playing back to goal, he wasn't maybe as physical as I would have liked to have seen.
Mm.
Which is weird because I felt as though he's decent aerially, but a lot of the time when he had a centre-back up his back, he wasn't maybe quite as strong as I would have wanted him to be. But I don't know if you noticed that.
I think that's fair. I think he's got a decent frame. Like, I think he's quite like Bamford, like in a lot of his physical attributes. I'm just not sure if he uses them as well as Bamford does. Like I said, I feel like Bamford sort of learned to be more combative, and I don't think that the Kitolara's kind of got that yet. And I think part of that is the league that he's playing in, where he maybe doesn't have to, where I think in the top divisions of England, you absolutely have to. And I think that's something that if he was playing up front for us, particularly in the system that we're now playing, he would have to adapt to that.
It's an interesting point that you raise, because I think a lot of people would raise that question about performances at the top end of the Jupiler Pro League in Belgium versus performing in the Premier League. So how would you anticipate that transition being for him?
It can be a challenge. Like one of the games I watched, I don't know if you watched this one, but I watched him play against Beerschot, who are one of the lower teams. And it was honestly like, it was just very, very easy for Bruges. They were just, it seemed a bit like a training game like that. They were just not competitive, Beerschot. And obviously in the Premier League, every single game is highly competitive. Jesse Marsh has talked about it a lot. I think he's obviously realised, no, this is not like the Austrian Bundesliga or like even like the Bundesliga. Like, this is, all these teams have ways that they can hurt you, and you're going to have to work to score. So I'd say that it is a hard adaptation to come from a league like that where it's quite imbalanced. But then equally, there are players and teams that that maximise that. So you have Brighton, who've signed a lot of players from Belgium. Trossard was signed from Genk, and they also signed, obviously this is not Belgium, but they signed Mwepu as well from Austria. So there are teams that do that. Dan Juma is now killing it in the Champions League for Villarreal, but he signed for Bournemouth. Obviously they went down, but he got injured like quite early in that time, so he never really got his go in the Premier League. But I think he would have done well.
I think it's worth saying as well that when you look at Bruges' performances in the Champions League group stages, now yes, they did finish bottom of the group that they were in, but they were in a group with Manchester City, PSG and RB Leipzig, which is probably a group of death really, and they put up some pretty good performances in
Yeah, they did
that.
All right. They beat PSG, didn't they?
Drew with PSG, and they beat Leipzig, and then they lost the final four games. But in those games, I think I watched a few of them, because I think it's always good to get a sense of how these players perform in European competition. And I thought De Ketelaere was pretty good in those in those games as well. And I think that's probably worth saying.
Yeah, I'd agree.
What else do you want to talk about with respect to De Ketelaere?
Yeah, I think the thing with him is that he is probably the highest potential out of any of these players. I mean, potential is a funny thing because, you know, it's so hard to predict how players will develop, but he's sort of rated by all these various different analytics things out there. He's rated as one of the top young players in the world. So I think he will carry the kind of fee that comes with that kind of reputation, and also as well as the fee, just lots of people sort of vying for his signature, lots of teams. So I think it's always possible to get players like that when they're from leagues like the Pro League, because the very big teams don't necessarily want to take the risk yet. They would rather see them take a step first. But there's still tons of teams in the top five leagues that would be in competition with a team like Leeds going for a player like him.
Yeah, and it's worth saying that Nico Schlotterbeck at Freiburg is just been allegedly, well, has allegedly accepted a deal of around 25 million euros to go to Dortmund. Now, Dortmund are a big side, but that's a lowish fee. And again, for me, Nico Schlotterbeck is probably one of the highest ceiling centre-backs in the world right now. But a lot of clubs, as you've said, just aren't willing to take the gamble until he's performed, I suppose, at a higher level. So do you think that sort of trajectory is possible then for someone like Dike Talara?
Yeah, I think so. I would say that he will also be a fee, something like that. So I think the highest, he probably will be their record sale. And I think their record sale at the moment is around that kind of fee of, I think it's 20 million euros, just over. And I think it was Wesley who went to Aston Villa, which seems funny now because he's just got replaced by two other strikers. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But I would say that was a lot of money for him.
In terms of for a club like Leeds, do you think he's the sort of player that they should be sinking maybe 25 mil on?
Depends what the rest of the budget is. I think if you've still got budget elsewhere, then I think it's a pretty good spend, because you're quite likely to at the very least make that money back, if not a big profit. It's obviously a risk. There are always risks signing players from leagues like this, but I would say there's risks in every transfer. It's just
with LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How you, it's what risk you choose to take, really.
Well, let's move on to the next option that we have, which is Valentin Castellanos, known to his pals as Tatty. He currently plays for New York City FC in MLS, Major League Soccer. He's a really interesting player, actually, career-wise, because he starts off playing youth soccer in Argentina, which is where he's born. I should say he's 23 years old. He is born in Argentina, starts going through the youth system there, but ends up in Chile, in playing for Universidad de Chile, which is a team there. Goes out on loan to a team who are in Uruguay called Torque, and then eventually goes on loan to New York City FC in 2018, and he's bought by them the season after. And he's had, again, approaching about 90 appearances for them. A very prolific goal scorer in MLS. He has around 40 goals there. He's also playing for the Argentina under-23s team at the moment as well. And Castellanos is a really exciting talent. I think he's probably, in terms of all-round ability, the best out of all of these players, potentially could challenge Dike Talara for that highest ceiling player. But I think there's still a lot we need to know about the way that Castellanos plays before we get a sense of where he's at in terms of his overall career trajectory. So talk to me about Castellanos, Josh.
Yeah, I think he looks a really classy number nine. We both agreed that he's probably the most rounded of all of these. So just kind of feels like a striker who can do everything that you want a striker to do. He presses well. He's got a real intensity about the way that he goes after the ball. He plays back to goal well. Again, I would still say Bamford is better at that, but I wouldn't say that there are issues in the way that he does that role. I think he looks like a player that can score all sorts of goals, and I think that would continue into the into the Premier League. I think he looks like a player who can play at a higher level and score goals at a higher level. It is a risk to take a player from the MLS because the MLS is, like, we talk about an unbalanced league in the other, like with the Pro League, but it's almost like MLS is unbalanced in terms of some really good attackers and some really rubbish defenders. So it can be hard to judge players because of that sort of weird imbalance across teams. And I think that partly comes because of salary cap and teams are just wanting to spend all of their money on forwards. But I think he just looks like a player who would suit a higher level. And I think my attention was brought to him because he has actually been linked to us, although one of these kind of like tenuous links, where it's like team talk or whatever. We haven't heard Phil Hay or Graham Smith mention him in conjunction with Leeds, but I would be very happy if it turned out to be true because I think he's great.
What are the motivations behind those links? Do you know, is there any reason why it might be the case that we were linked to him? Because that's usually what happens, right? There's usually some kind of knob that they latch onto that, you know, I guess Marcelo Bielsa once coached him when he was at an under-23s team or something.
I don't know if it all have just been the fact that at the time Bielsa was still our manager and he was Argentinian. And he'd also played in Chile and Bielsa had managed in Chile. I don't know, but I think he kind of strikes me as the type of player that Orta would be very sort of on top of because he likes to keep his eye out for top performing players in less fashionable leagues.
Let's talk a little bit about physicality because physicality wise, he's quite different to Bamford. I think he struck me as someone who's maybe a little bit more athletic than Bamford, and I wondered what you thought of that as an attribute.
Yeah, I think he, I mean, like Bamford's really, I think he's deceptively fast, but I think Castellanos looks like, I think he could be a little bit nippier, but he's sort of, I've got him in my head, I'm thinking, I didn't check the heights, which I should have done, but I think he looked to me a tiny bit taller, a little bit slimmer.
I'm on Wikipedia and it's saying that he's 5'10", which feels wrong to me.
Yeah, that if that's true, then he's not taller. Great scouting work from me there. But
I do think the camera angles in MLS do make players look massive for some reason. I don't know why that is the case, but...
I think he's certainly, like, whether or not I would say he's more athletic, I think he is an athletic player. I think he's quick. He was a lot more comfortable like using his physicality than Dikita Lara. He was a lot better, I would say, like backing in to defenders, which I think is something that should be important in this kind of system where you're potentially asking this player to act as a target man at times. They need to be able to do that sort of on the halfway line, 30 yards from goal, or even like if they're receiving it into their feet on the edge of the box, back up the defender and then lay it off to someone arriving to get on the end of a shot or something like that. So I think he's good at that side of the game.
Yeah, something that struck me when I was watching him is that he definitely seems like the sort of player who tries to achieve things through his physicality, especially up against centre-backs and stuff. So he really, really harries opponent defenders on the ball when it looks like a lost cause. And I think that, you know, even sort of in situations where there would be like free kicks or corners where he would just really be trying to jump over defenders to try and get to the ball, and I quite like that about him, and I think that would work really well in a Marsh system. And then I guess in terms of the pressing stuff, like just looking at his data over the last couple of seasons in MLS, and yeah, his high pressing numbers are just through the roof. So yeah, pushing like the 100th percentile in both of them. He's clearly good aerially as well, which suggests that he's probably a little bit taller than 5'10", and just all around his numbers were really impressive. I think maybe the only area where he was a little bit low as dribbling. He's not dribbling at a rate more than the average in MLS, and his success rates are pretty low as well, which surprised me a little bit, because from watching him, I actually thought he was quite good on the ball. There's a few situations where in tight spaces, he would get out of those spaces and win fouls. So what did you make of his dribbling actions?
Yeah, I thought it was decent in that regard. Like, he had, he's got good quick feet, and again, he can use his physicality if he needs to sort of push past the player, and he's got a nice, like, powerful first step to accelerate and beat players from a standing start. Lots to like about that side of his game. And I think out of all of these players, I think he would score the most goals, which I don't know if we've really talked about that, but his goal record, like I think he had 19 goals in MLS last season. He's got 4 in the already this season, and in the CONCACAF Champions League as well. So he's just, I think he's the one who's, wherever he ends up, I think he's going to score a lot of goals.
Yeah, it's worth saying that MLS has only just kicked off this season, so 4 goals is impressive.
Yeah, that's in 6 games.
I'm with you. I really like him. I think he would really work well in the Marsh system, especially in those central spaces where, you know, you're almost trying to bulldoze the ball through the middle and achieve goals in that way. I think he would fit in perfectly. I genuinely think that he would be a great player to get in. In terms of this as a business deal, how would you be looking at it, Josh?
Yeah, I think so. When you think that it's New York City, you're dealing with the City group here. This is Manchester City.
This is Manchester City we're talking about. Manchester City.
But so that, it's then a question of, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? So there's one part of me that, I didn't mention this, but as he's effectively owned by Man City, often if there's a player they think is of that kind of, like, Premier League level, they just buy that player from one of their sister clubs for Man City, and then they sell that player and Man City can take the profits, and that work that helps them for FFP and all that kind of thing. So that's just a notable thing of, maybe the City group don't think that they're going to make a sale like that. I'm not sure. I think we've obviously dealt with them before with Jack Harrison, it seems like Orta's got good relationships there, because the fact that we got Harrison for that extra season loan because of the pandemic, which a lot of teams might not have wanted to do that kind of deal. So I think that he probably would be of a high cost for a player from MLS. I'm guessing he might be about 15 million. I think that would be maybe 15 million euros, don't know, but 10 to 15 million pounds, perhaps. I'll be happy with that deal. I'll be very happy with that deal if we got it. And with him, I think he's young enough and stepping into a top 5 league for the first time that you could say to him, like, you're not the first choice number 9. And I think he would be like, okay, like, this is still an opportunity for me.
In terms of competition for his signature, how do you think that would go down?
Yeah, I think there will be other teams after him. But I think like we've said earlier, I think in those kinds of non-top 5 leagues, you've always got a chance if you go in strong for a player, because I think some other teams are a bit tentative and they're not sure whether they want to take that risk or not. So I think if we went in with a good bid, there's always a decent chance.
Well, let's move on to our final option before we then sum up and decide which one of these options is the best, or try and decide on some sort of hierarchy. But another interesting player here. So a player called Terra Moffi, who is playing at Lorient in France at the moment, 22 years old. He's a Nigerian footballer. And again, another player with a really interesting route into European football. As far as I can tell from the information that I've got to hand, he enters Europe in Lithuania and plays for a couple of Lithuanian clubs between the years of 2017 and 2020, before going to Kortrijk in Is that in the Belgium?
He certainly did play in Belgium.
Yeah, it's Belgian. I was just making sure it wasn't in the Netherlands. And then from there, he moved to Lorient in France. Really interesting player. Tell us about how you came across Terran Moffey, Josh.
Yeah, I think I first was aware of him actually from Football Manager, which I think is that happens with a few people. I think you find a player that is fun on Football Manager and check him out in real life, and straight away I was like, hey, he could really work for us in terms of the way that he plays, and particularly in the way that we're playing now. I put him down as someone who I think can cause and thrive in chaos, which I think is a big part of this way that we're trying to play. Like, I think if you put the ball up to him, he's really aggressive in going in for aerial duels, physical duels. He's not always the most clean in how he receives the ball, which I didn't think was a technical issue. I've written down that he just seems to do everything at 100 miles an hour. So I think there are times where he could control the ball, but he's just like so busy, like, right, I'm going to do this and then this and then this. And then he hasn't actually kind of allowed himself the that moment to just slow down and control the ball. But I think in the way that Marsh wants us to play in counter-pressing, it really wouldn't matter that much if the ball went up to him and he lost it because he was trying to do something too quickly. Because as long as the other players are around him where they should be, then we swarm and win it back, and then he runs again. As well as his sort of aggression back to goal and trying to win it, he's always looking to stretch the last line, run in behind as much as he can. He's really, really quick. He is pretty wild in terms of finishing. So I looked through some of his shots over the last season, and there are some where you're like, oh, that's nice and composed, good finish, takes it around the keeper. There's another one where you're like, he's literally just swinging before he's even got his feet positioned right, and he's missing by a long way. So that's something that we should be aware of. But it's interesting that this season he's like 3 goals below his XG, and last season he was a couple of above his XG. And I would say, like, looking at the 2 seasons of evidence and having watched some, I would say that it's just that he's kind of average to poor in terms of finishing. But he's really, really good at getting into the right position. So he's like, I think over the last 2 seasons, he's like 80th percentile, something like that, for non-penalty XG for strikers. And that's playing in a bad team in France, in Lorient. So that's good signs of a striker that, even though he might not be a great finisher, he will still consistently score goals because he's always there. And I think he's always going to be around his XG, even if just a little bit under. And that's, you know, Bamford has been that, so it's okay.
Yeah, and there's a sense in which the Marsh system is just about efficiency, right? It's about getting the ball into dangerous areas and scoring them. So that's clearly going to be something that would be useful in our team. I guess Moffey is clearly the most, I don't want to say one-dimensional, but he's the least rounded of all of these players, I would say. So what are your thoughts on him, like, in that respect, I suppose, in terms of the long-term impact that he might have? Because this does feel very much like a Marsh ball option.
Yeah, I would say, I think looking at him, I've kind of thought he was the best for Marsh ball, but I thought Castellanos was probably the best number 9, like, overall. I don't think that Moffey wouldn't be good in another system, but I just sort of thought his attributes really suited this system. And I would say that he's more rounded than, like, Nketiah, but he's not as rounded as Solanke or Castellanos. I think he's sort of similarly rounded to Kitolara, but in different facets of the game. Like, they're both better at different things to the other.
And then I guess in terms of a deal on this one, presumably it would be fairly easy for us to work a deal.
Yeah, I feel like he would be like 10 million, which I think that would be pretty good. Like he's, I can't remember, they got him for pretty cheap, I think, Lorient. What's it say that he went for? Just going to Transfer Market right now, live as I speak to you. he was 7 million, which that's more than I thought he would be.
7 million euros or?
No, that's in pounds. So maybe he would be like 12 million, I think, and they would feel pretty happy with that, I would say. Like, when you think of, like, I think there's always good value in France, and that wouldn't feel like a lot for him, I would say.
We've talked a lot about moving between leagues. What do you make of the step between Ligue 1 and the Premier League?
I think it's like a lot of players are done that well. I think with all these leagues, I think forwards maybe find it the hardest. But I don't tend to look at that and be too worried about it. I think he would probably find it easier to adapt than perhaps the last two that we've spoken about. Even though I think they would be both very good, I just think they would perhaps have a little bit of a slow start.
And so that rounds us out with the options that we've got. But I'm interested to hear the ordering that you would have of them. So let's assume that we're not going to rank Solanke and Nketiah. How would you rank De Ketelaere, Castellanos and Moffi? And I guess maybe we should do two rankings. Maybe one should be fit-wise, and then the other one should be in terms of likelihood of getting them and how you would, as Victor Orta, maybe approach the process of working through the list.
I think I'd put De Ketelaere as third best fit because I think the lack in physicality and the fact that he probably wants to be a little bit more of a deep lying forward, I'll put him third. And then I find it pretty hard to go. So I think Castellanos, I'm saying, is the most rounded. I think I'm going to say Moffi second and Castellanos first, but I wouldn't have an issue to flip that, really. I do think that Moffi's the best in terms of the fit, but equally I think it's like Castellanos would have no issue fitting with it, and he's probably a bit better overall, so I think I'd give him the edge on that.
Yeah, and I suppose that with Castellanos you've got a player who is going to fit most systems afterwards, whereas with Moffi it's very one-dimensional in that respect.
Yeah, like I said, I think he can cope in some other ones, but I think he would be best in the way that we're playing right now, whereas I think Castellanos you could change to a more possession style and he would have no issues with it at all.
Yeah, and then in terms of how you would approach it as Victor Orta, you've suggested that, you know, De Ketelaere is maybe going to be one of the harder ones to get anyway, given that he's in such high demand.
Mm.
How would you order this? Would you start off with someone like De Ketelaere or Castellanos and see how far you got in the negotiations and sort of bank on Moffi being an easy get?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd put the feelers out with all three for sure. I would sort of ask the question of De Ketelaere, and then, you know, if you find out that they want 30 million euros for him, then you say, well, we probably won't go there. Or they come back and say, oh, we're holding out for a Champions League team. That being their agent, his agent, I mean, then you just go, okay, no worries. But I think I would try to push harder on Castellanos. And like you say, I think Moffi, I think he is a player that's well thought of. And last season, there was even talk of like, right, he will be gone after, because he'd only just gone there the summer before. There was talk that he might not even be at Lorient for a second season. So I think he will be a player that other teams are looking at. But I think his slightly poor finishing season might mean that he's a bit less in demand than he might have been. So you could sort of wait to have him as your backup.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this podcast. It's been great fun chatting to you about these players, Josh. It's been great fun watching these players as well. Thanks for listening, listeners. Do get in touch and let us know what you thought of these players. Do let us know if you get the chance to watch these players, what you think of them as well. We'll be back in another month's time where we'll be covering another position, I suspect, probably one of the central midfield positions, either the defensive or the more attacking of those two positions. Josh, thanks again for coming on. It's been great chatting.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I look forward to... I think I might have said we would do midfielders last time, so apologies if we did mislead people, but strikers felt more... Actually, somehow felt more important at the moment after the way things have gone recently. And yeah, I enjoyed doing this one a lot.
Yeah, and you have our promise that we will be talking about centre midfielders in some form in the next episode next month. So do join us then. And until then, goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.